You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. In today's podcast, we talk about a scientist named Krauss who thinks that religion should be taught in school, but from his perspective as an atheist. For our main topic, we cover some basic projects that you can do to help save money and winterize your home, and also talk about winterizing your vehicle. And Matron and Maiden bring you the lost arts of womanhood. Specifically, they cover a medical emergency kit. For our worldview segment today, I cover an article from The Blaze, and the title is "Prominent Scientist Says Religion Will Go Away in a Generation If Atheists Use This Tactic to Teach Children." Okay, so this article kind of goes through the beliefs and the suggestions of a Lawrence M. Krauss, and he's a cosmologist and a theoretical physicist. And so he says things like, and I quote, "What we need to do is present comparative religion as a bunch of interesting historical anecdotes and show the silly reasons why they each did what they did," he said. "Instead of shying away from it, we have to explicitly educate people to confront their own misconceptions." He goes on to say, "Change is always one generation away. So if we can plant the seeds of doubt in our children, religion will go away in a generation, or at least largely go away. And that's what I think we have an obligation to do." He obviously wants to teach people, and specifically children, because he goes on to say that basically we need to start with kids, that people that are adults are too far gone. Sounds familiar if you have studied history at all, of the likes of, say, Hitler, for example, who said basically, "Give me your children, and in one generation, what you think won't matter." What Krauss is talking about is not education, but indoctrination. Now, to be fair, everybody undergoes indoctrination, whether we like to think of that or not. We all are indoctrinated into something. Krauss just simply wants to indoctrinate people into his fundamental worldview, which is based on atheism. And so we must understand this, and it must give us as Christians the importance of worldview and maintaining a Christian worldview and also understanding the worldview of others. And so worldview matters, theology matters. For today's main topic, I want to talk to you about some winterization projects. These projects are fairly simple. They will save you money, hopefully, and they just don't cost that much to implement. In fact, some of them don't cost anything to implement. So I want to talk about that. Not only does it help to just winterize the home, help you be more comfortable, but also save some money. So the first one is basically just dodging the draft. Okay, and this was what some people have called an old Great Depression fixture. And that is just having a draft snake or whatever you want to call it. It's just placing something under where you have drafts, so under doors and that type of thing. So it could be as simple as a rolled bath towel under a drafty door. You can get more attractive so you can work and make things that look good to do that instead of just a rolled towel. But something as simple as a rolled towel under a door will cut your energy usage by anywhere from 5 to 30%, depending on how drafty your doors are. So this is a simple fix and something that doesn't cost anything. And the second thing is your furnace filters, changing your furnace filters. So not only is this important for air quality in the home, but it also reduces the energy requirement on the furnace itself. It doesn't have to work as hard if you've got a clean filter, a good filter. And I would recommend something like an electrostatic filter rather than, you know, your disposables. Those things will trap what they claim is around 88% of all the bacteria, mold, viruses, and pollen that cause illness and irritation. So this is really quite important. You want your air quality to be high because it's directly tied to your health. There's the HEPA filters, things like that. They can remove even more, up to 99% of airborne particles. So a good filter, something that should be changed before we kick off into winter here, and also for air quality. The next project is very simple and costs nothing, and that's to run your fans in reverse. So this simple little project that a lot of people don't even think about reverses the direction of the blades. So think of it like this. Counterclockwise, as you're looking up at the fan, produces cooling breezes. Okay, and then while switching it to clockwise, makes it warmer. So it takes that air that's pulled near the ceiling and it circulates it back into the living room. So, of course, heat rises. And in the wintertime, especially as you're trying to heat your space, all that warmer air is moving up, and those fans is a very efficient way of pushing it back down. And this can help reduce your cost by as much as 10%. The next project is if you have air conditioners, you want to winterize your air conditioner and your water lines. This one's really simple, actually. And it will save you a little bit, not so much for this winter, but for next summer. So simply drain any hoses and air conditioner pipes and make sure you don't have any excess water pooled inside the equipment, things like that. So if your AC has a water shutoff valve, turn that off. Also, any hoses that are drained, make sure they're stowed away neatly. Turn off the exterior water spigots. This is really important. You want to make sure that no pressure is able to build up in those water lines. So you may even, if you're able to turn off the water to those spigots, keep it cracked just a little bit and so pressure doesn't build up, and this will prevent damage. The next project, again, very simple, costs no money. Turn down your water heater. So most people keep their water heaters at around 140 degrees, and this is very hot, almost scalding hot in many cases. So just by lowering that temperature to, say, 120 degrees, you could reduce your water heating costs by say, 10%. So this is a real simple way to do it, and you may even look into tankless water heaters, which are even more efficient than turning down your water heater. But if that's what you have, if you've got, a traditional hot water heater tank, simply turning it down to whatever temperature you would like will save you some money. And also, what's important to note with this is a lot of people heat their water with propane. So here's another savings by just turning down the temperature. If you are able to not have to top off your propane, say in the wintertime when the prices are higher, it gives you more flexibility if you're using less propane, to buy propane when prices are lowest, which is generally in the summer. So that would be an additional savings for those that have to use or that are using propane. I don't say have to. In some ways, it's much better to use propane to heat water. And like I said before, you may look into tankless water heaters or even a solar hot water heater if you live in an area where that's feasible. Next simple project, although it can be a little bit pricey, is to install storm doors and windows. This is huge, huge energy efficiency savings right here. It could be as much as 45% increase in efficiency, helps to seal the drafts and reduce airflow. So it also gives you, a lot more protection, and it can use it to increase security in many ways, if you're basically adding another door that will lock. Certainly will help stop those those drafts and cold winds when they start to blow. But obviously, this can cost quite a bit of money. There are efficiency gains to be made for sure. Depending upon your individual situation, would determine on how long it would take to break even and then start money savings with this project. The next one is basically to give your heating system a tune-up, whatever it may be. And anything from a propane furnace to a wood stove. And so just taking a look at that, whether it's cleaning or a general tune-up. Next small project is just taking a look at your thermostat. And if you don't have a programmable one, install one of those. Or if you do, to take a look at it and determine where you have been inefficient. So, for example, can you keep it a little bit cooler at night? Or when those times when you're leaving the home, are you making sure it's turned down? So here's a general rule of thumb. For every degree you lower the thermostat during, the peak heating season, you'll save between 1% and 3% of your heating bill. Okay, so just 1 degree is going to save you between 1% and 3% of your bill. And so, there's a lot of gains to be made there if you're able to maybe turn it down a little bit cooler at night, or again, turning it down when you leave. Are there rooms that you don't use, and can you block those vents so that more air is being pushed to other areas, and you're heating less space, basically. So definitely something to consider if you don't have a good programmable thermostat now, or even if you do, you can once again look at it and find those further efficiencies. Another simple project is buying window insulation kits. So this is the film that goes over a window itself. And, they're very inexpensive. And they add, just that little extra bit of a buffer against draft. So it gives you just a little bit more R value, that goes over your window glass. So, consider this. There's going to be some savings. It's not a ton of savings, but may help in your situation. The next small project would be to get some kind of an energy monitor. Okay, so that you can get something that comes to mind is the Energy Detective, and you can just Google that. It's called TED. And such a device basically indicates your household electrical usage in real time. And so it can project your monthly bill, and it's more, and you're not going to go out and look at your meter, or even if you do, maybe you're not fully understanding what it means. You just look at your bill each month. Having this thing in the home ticking off in front of you may have an impact on what you're doing. So this is a good thing to consider so that you can monitor your usage and kind of determine and figure out those things that consume more electricity, and you may end up using them less. So you could save, it really depends on how far you go with this, but anywhere from 10 to 20% on each bill just by monitoring your usage. Because most people, it's just like budgeting. If you as far as your money is concerned, if you're watching what you spend less. Okay, if you don't budget, you spend more. And that's just the bottom line. It's the same thing here. If you watch your energy usage, you'll use less. If you don't, you'll probably use more. Next easy project is just getting some caulking and weather stripping. So finding those areas that need to be caulked or weather stripped and doing that. So more, again, efficiency savings here. Some ways that you can determine if you need to do it. Like for example, on windows, you could have somebody outside the home kind of using something, whether it's an air compressor or even a hair dryer. And inside the home, you have, say, a candle or something like that. And you can see different areas of the windows where the outside air is impacting that candle, and you know, you probably need some caulking there if it is. So little things like that, little tips to help you figure out where your drafts are. It's kind of hard to tell just by looking. So that would be a good way to do it. Another thing you can do is just using thick drapes in those areas and making sure they're covered up. The windows are covered up at night specifically, or whenever you're not using the room. And it's just another method of weatherizing the area. The next tip for saving money in winter is just to wear more clothes. I know it sounds simple, but it's true. So just by wearing another layer of clothing, you're basically adding degrees. Think of it like that. You're adding degrees of added warmth. And so if you put on a couple layers and you're adding 4 or 5 degrees of warmth, and somewhere where maybe you were comfortable with keeping the room at 66 degrees or 70 degrees, and now you can keep it at 66 or 62. So again, if you remember that, that's 1 to 3% of savings for every degree that you turn your heat down. Insulation. Insulation is probably one of the best ways and most efficient ways of saving money on energy, being able to keep that heat in. And so look for your areas that you are needing more insulation and consider doing that for more energy efficient usage. Your pipes. So insulate your pipes. If you're in a cold climate and you have pipes that are outside, they obviously need to be insulated. And in cold climates, they don't generally build with pipes exposed to the outside. But even in the inside, say in a garage or in places like that where it is colder, this will help you to save money on energy. And it'll also help to prevent freezing, which would be huge as far as cost is concerned. So that's always a good thing. And if you want a good tip on finding out, okay, what's a good candidate for insulation, if those pipes are warm to the touch, that's a good candidate for insulation. Okay, we want to keep that heat in those pipes as much as possible. And, you know, there's very simple pre-slit pipe foam at most hardware stores. You can just cut it to size, fasten it in place, duct tape it, and you're done. Okay, so this is a very simple way, relatively inexpensive, and you can really double the efficiency of that pipe. So if that pipe is, you know, getting you, say, an R1 value, putting insulation on it can bump it up to, say, R7 or even better. So that's a great savings right there. The next easy project is getting a little bit deeper into your infrastructure, but taking a look at your ducts for your heating. So studies have shown that 10 to 30% of heated air in an average system escapes from ducts. Okay, so that's you're losing 10 to 30% of your heat just in the ducts before it even gets into the room at all. So this is a good one to look at. You may require some help in this area. So a professional technician may be needed depending on how you know, as far as access to those ducts. But if you can figure out a way to do this yourself, this would be great. And so there's ways that they can test and figure out where the leaks are, and then there's some simple steps you can take in order to help seal those up and also clean them out. Okay, because this is directly involves your air quality. That goes back to your filter and the importance of that as well. So these are tied together. Definitely worth looking at. Okay, we talked about some simple projects that you can do to help increase your efficiency, save you some money this winter. Next thing I want to talk about is how to winterize your car. Okay, and the first aspect of this is engine oil in the winter time. So kind of switching that out. What we're looking to do here is switch over to thinner, less viscous oil. So let's say you run 10W30 in the summer. try moving to 5W30 in the fall and winter. So when you're getting ready to change your oil next here pretty quick, make sure you switch to a less viscous oil, so 5W30 or something like that. Or, you know, refer to your manual on what's good for your area. Engine coolant. You make sure your coolant is good, and in some places you want to switch your ratio. So the winter ratio may be 60% coolant to 40% water instead of, say, a 50-50. So take a look at that and get yourself ready for winter time by changing out your coolant or switching out the ratio of coolant. The next thing is the battery. Not only does our engine not like to start in the winter, the battery capacity is reduced by cold weather. So make sure you do a thorough inspection of the battery, the cables, the terminals, fluid, the whole nine yards. So check over your batteries for cracks, breaks in the cables, the terminals. Make sure they're fitting snugly with no loose connections. Check your battery fluid by uncovering the refill hole. If the level is low from the bottom, make sure you refill with distilled water. Also, it wouldn't hurt to get a level check on it to make sure it's holding the charge. Because if it's struggling now when the weather's not that bad, it's not going to work when it gets really cold. So once you're done inspecting, take a look at it. You know, maybe it's time to go ahead and switch it out. Next item is snow tires, and here you got to take a look at your area because there's the legality issue. Snow tires are very hard on roads, and so generally speaking, they'll have time, you know, dates basically when you're allowed to put snow tires on and when you have to take them off by. So mounting the right tires on your vehicle, huge advantage when trekking through snow and ice. And especially if you live off the beaten path, like we do. So you can even buy snow tires with studs to help you get where you need to go. And always have a set of chains as well. And know how to put on the chains. Put the chains on when the weather is still good, so you're not learning for the first time in the snow. Okay, so this is really going to help you be able to get around in the wintertime. And, you know, make sure that you take them off when the season's over as well, because you do lose fuel efficiency and also handling improves also with a less aggressive tire. So, that's just, you have these aggressive tires with the studs, it does great when traction's just not there, but not so well on clean roads. So, another important element is windshield treatment. And so this, you know, if you're going to maybe put in a different type of a windshield washer fluid that doesn't freeze up, but be careful with this. If you put in something that's too strong, you might do some damage to your car's paint. So look for a good product with some antifreeze in it to be able to make sure that you're going to be able to see well. Door locks can freeze in cold weather, and you might end up breaking your key off trying to get it open. And so, you know, a lot of people just talk about, you know, warm water, pouring warm water over it, and that, you know, is enough to get you in the lock. But make sure that you have a means to do that if that's what you're going to go with. There's also some de-icing products out there that have glycerin in them that will help you if that happens. Just make sure you think about where you're keeping it. You can't keep it in your glove box if your car is frozen shut. So maybe it's in your garage or your desk at work, you know, whatever the case may be, if somewhere where you can get to where it's we're going to be able to use it. And then the final thing is your emergency kit. And I won't go into great detail here. If you go onto our website and sign up for our newsletter, we send you a free ebook that has a detailed emergency kit for your vehicle in it, and specifically for winter as well. So, you know, all your regular items that you would think in a vehicle emergency kit It also goes into more detail on winter considerations as well.
Hi, this is Matron
and Maiden.
Journey with us
as we rediscover
the lost arts of womanhood. All right, so today we're going to be talking about putting together a home medical kit. This is really handy in emergencies, but it also is really good just for basic everyday use. If somebody's not feeling well or you're trying to keep other people from getting something that someone else has, whether it's in the neighborhood or in the home. So we're going to list some things that we have in our medical kit, and I'm sure that it's not 100% complete, but these are things that we've found over the years to be very handy and a lot of them necessary, especially now that we get into this time of Ebola scare and pandemic and all of that. We won't want to go to town.
Yeah.
We'll want to stay away.
Yes.
So in order to stay away from people, not only do we need to worry about our health, eat healthy and take care of ourselves, rest and all of that, but also have things on hand in case someone gets sick so we don't have to go to the doctor.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's start out. The first thing that I think is kind of obvious for a medical kit is bandages.
Yeah. So you want small bandages, medium, and large.
Yeah, large. I mean, you know, to really cover an area that would be maybe a burn.
Yeah.
You know, a large burn or something. So, and the other thing would be ACE bandages for wrapping in case somebody sprains a wrist or anything like that. Our ACE bandages have come in really handy. We also use them with our ice packs to hold them in place.
Yeah.
If they've been in a spot where the wrap for the ice pack wouldn't hold it in place, we'd use an ACE bandage.
Yeah.
All right. So then you'll also want pressure bandages in case somebody cuts themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're there alone with them and maybe you can't keep your hand pressed or they're not feeling strong enough or it's a small child, to be able to put that on there, it continues the pressure while you're able to do further care or get medical attention if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
That brings me to gauze pads.
Yeah. Gauze pads are extremely handy because they absorb all of the blood.
Right. In case you never know. And then a tourniquet for that, for the instance of a really bad accident and being on a farm.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot higher chance.
Yeah, it can happen. We work with a lot of farm equipment, axes, hatchets.
Yeah.
Machetes. I mean, we have a lot
wild animals.
Yeah, we have a lot of serious, you know, equipment out here. And so we need to make sure that we're ready to, if we can't press it to stop the bleeding because it's too large of a wound or too large of a cut, that we can at least stop the bleeding at a tourniquet spot. All right, and splints. So I'm hoping this never happens, but if somebody breaks something, again, we're quite far from medical help.
At least 45 minutes.
Yeah, at least 45 minutes. So for us to be able to temporarily set it and put it in a splint to keep it immobile until we're able to get the medical help, or if we can't go into town.
Because
of whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe it's an ice storm. I mean, maybe we've had a really bad storm.
Exactly. What if right now it's snowing and we literally cannot get down our driveway because our driveway is steep? We cannot get out of the house. Somebody falls down the stairs and they break their leg.
Yeah. So we can...
What are you going to do?
We can temporarily set it and put it in a splint. Which then leads naturally into Motrin.
Yes.
I know it's not a natural thing, but if somebody is in a lot of pain, we need to have some way to reduce the inflammation immediately and to reduce the pain that they're experiencing.
Yes.
And you know, we don't use it frequently, even for fevers. Mm-hmm. We stick with natural remedies most of the time. But if a child is starting to run, or even an adult, kind of a high fever, I still don't bring them to the doctor. I'm continuing to give them homeopathy, essential oils, maybe some herbs, things like that to be slowly helping resolve the issue. But in the meantime, at night, in order to enable them to sleep, I will give them Motrin to take their fever down.
And all of the natural stuff works.
It does. Mm-hmm. It just takes a little bit of time. You have to be patient. You have to be willing to continue trying.
Because instead of just erasing the symptoms, it's actually solving the problem.
Right. It's getting to the root of the problem, and that's really what we
need.
Okay, so the next thing that we have is masks, and those are handy for anything. I mean, if smoke is around. We used them the other day when we cleaned
the chimney.
We put the masks on. You never know what you might need a mask for.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention quick clot.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So if somebody's bleeding and it's quite significant, in putting quick clot on there can stop the bleeding fairly quickly. All right. Medical tape and lots of it.
Yes.
And that doesn't expire.
No.
So get medical tape. Mm-hmm. You never know. Again, you can tape gauze pads on.
Anything, really. You can use it. If you don't have pressure bandages, you can even use that.
Yeah.
Just wrap it really tightly.
Yeah. Put a rag on there and wrap it tight. Tweezers.
Yeah, for slivers or anything else that might be stuck in your body.
Yeah. You never know. Sounds painful. Okay, and then cotton swabs and cotton balls. And those are sort of self-explanatory. We just keep those on hand just in case, you know, we need to apply rubbing alcohol or hydrogen peroxide or things like that.
Cleaning any wound.
Which are two more things you need in your emergency kit.
Yeah.
Rubbing alcohol and hydrogen peroxide.
Yes.
All right. So let's see. The next thing would be clay.
Yes. We use that for bee stings, and Mom mixes it with a little bit of water, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it creates a clay poultice, and she just puts it on the area and wraps a rag around it and keeps it there, and it literally draws the toxins out of your body.
Yeah. So we've had several, were they wasps?
Yes, wasps.
Wasp stings around here since we moved in, and the house was empty for a few months, and so the wasps were pretty happy building nests all over.
About five gigantic wasp nests.
On our back deck.
Yes.
Yeah. And the kids discovered that slowly over time and mainly by getting stung.
Yeah. It was Joseph and Melissa.
Yeah. So that was really handy. I made the clay poultice and put it on there, and it took the stinging away fairly quickly, but it also drew out all the toxins and took the swelling down, and they really had no evidence of a bee sting or wasp sting within a few hours.
Yeah.
Activated charcoal. And that is very important, especially if somebody ingests poison.
Yeah.
Now, Linda, you use that when you're having stomach aches because it also absorbs the acid that's overproducing in your stomach.
Yeah. And it works almost immediately.
Yeah. But in case of ingestion of a toxin or a poison, it's really important to have something that will quickly absorb that. You can drink clay as well. And I think that probably would work too, but I would make sure I have activated charcoal on hand, which we do, and then syrup of ipecac, which then would help it come back out once it's been absorbed. Now, not all household cleaning supplies should you induce vomiting.
Yeah.
There's a time you shouldn't, and so depending on what you have in your home, we don't use
chemicals
to clean our home.
All natural stuff.
Yeah. I don't worry about that, but if you are still the kind of person that is using Pine Sol or bleach or Windex or any of those types of things, I would, if I were you, keep on hand what you should do in case of possible ingestion.
Yes, especially if you have small children.
Yes, just know what the emergency procedure is, because sometimes it's drink milk, sometimes it's induced vomiting. So be prepared if you have chemical cleaning agents in your home to know what to do in case of ingestion. And it may not be your child. It may be somebody else's child that comes over to your house. So don't think, well, all my kids are teenagers, I don't have to worry about it. You might have a 2-year-old show up at your house and walk over and go to your unprotected cupboard because you have teenagers. You didn't lock it with a toddler lock.
Yeah.
So just be prepared. All right. Now we're going to talk about essential oils. Now, we have a lot of essential oils.
Completely robust collection.
Yes. We have a lot. So because we have a lot, I'm not going to sit here and tell you everything that we have in our essential oil collection. I love them all, and we use them all for different reasons. I'm going to pick out just a few that I think are really helpful to have in an emergency kit if you only want to have two or three essential oils in your kit. The first would be thieves oil, and this is something I posted about on the Facebook page the other day, well, and Twitter. It fights off infections, an antibacterial, antiviral. We use it in a diffuser.
Yes.
And we have put it on our skin, but we always, put an oil on it or whatever. So we kind of water it down. The other way that I've used it is toothpaste and mouthwash, mm-hmm. because it's really good for your gums.
Yeah.
Let's see. The second one would be lavender.
Definitely. That helps with burns. It helps you sleep if you put a little bit on your pillow. Let's see, what else does it help with?
And it's an antibacterial.
Antibacterial.
It'll help with allergies. Say you have a cat and you know that somebody's coming over who's really allergic to a cat. People have said that they've been able to diffuse lavender in the room after vacuuming, of course, but diffuse lavender in the room, and a person who has these allergies was not affected while they were there.
Yes.
So if you have somebody who's severely allergic to dust, and one of two things, either you live in a really dusty area or you don't like to dust, just diffuse lavender.
Yeah.
Okay. The next would be basil. Basil helps reduce stress and tension, and this is through inhalation and also through diffusing. And then again is a sleep aid, so putting it on your pillow or something like that. Those are the three, I think, essential ones. I also like mint because that really, for me, has been a pain reliever. Even with muscles and aches and pains or a pulled muscle in my back, I tore my rotator cuff almost completely through. And mint, it was wintergreen and peppermint that I used. And I would just keep it on there as a patch, and it really made me able to move my arm.
And it smelled really good.
Yeah, I smelled minty all the time. Okay, now herbs. So we keep several different, we keep quite a few herbs.
Yeah.
But again, the essentials that I think are important, the first one would be peppermint. Lindy, you've drank that, right?
Yeah.
For stomach?
Mm-hmm.
Mainly for stomach. She always has stomach things. What's your problem? Yeah. Using that, diffusing it in, or not diffusing, but making it into a tea is really helpful. It's a pleasant taste.
Yeah.
And it can help with digestion. It can help discourage bad bacteria.
Yes.
From growing. So that's, it's a helpful herb. Chamomile is another one. And
it helps reduce diabetic complications. It boosts the immune system. It's great for colds. It relieves muscle spasms and menstrual cramps for women.
It also reduces inflammation and soothes the stomach. And one of the main reasons why I drink it in the evening is because it does help promote sleep.
Yeah, and it really relaxes your nerves.
Yeah. And apparently it's really good for your liver as well, which is always good, and especially when you're dealing with any kind of infection, illness, or possible poisons in the air or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, dandelion is another one.
Yes. I've actually drank this one before. Stomach.
For digestion.
Again.
Yeah. And it did. It helped a lot. Now, I don't think you liked the taste of dandelion that much.
No.
Yeah. But it is functional. It's good. Yeah. And it helps with organ function as well.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right. Echinacea.
Yes.
Echinacea tea.
It supports your immune system.
Yeah. So you can help fight colds a little faster.
Yeah.
And help your immune system to stay stronger. Senna. Senna is one of those teas that maybe people, or herbs that people don't want to talk about so much, but making it into a tea. I think it's kind of tasty, but there's a lot of people that really don't like it that much.
I've never had it.
However, it does move your system along. If you're constipated at all, it's a good tea. It's not something you want to be using regularly. If you have a problem with daily constipation, that's probably your diet. And you need to evaluate what you're eating and start eliminating some things that could be causing constipation. But that occasional constipation problem can be resolved by using senna, by drinking senna tea. And the next morning, well, you'll feel like a new person.
Okay.
All right. And the last herb I'm really going to encourage you to get is garlic oil. That has been our go-to herb for many, many years.
For ear infections.
Ear infections.
Which I mainly get.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you haven't gotten one in a while now.
No.
But it has been a lifesaver many times when the children have been dealing with ear infections. I've been able to keep them off of antibiotics. And as soon as they start complaining of anything in their ear hurting, we start dropping garlic oil.
Yeah, and it honestly, as soon as it hits my ear, it's like a relief.
Yeah.
It's
and then
crazy.
Within a day or two,
it's gone.
The infection is completely gone.
Absolutely love it.
Yeah. Now, colloidal silver is not an herb, but it is something that we've used very regularly in our home.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody's gotten sick, just adding a little bit of colloidal silver, a teaspoon here and there, to their tea or to water or juice or whatever, has helped eliminate the bacteria or the virus very quickly.
Yeah, and you can use it internally or on your skin.
Yep.
If you have a burn or anything, you can put it on there and it helps heal it quicker.
Yeah. Colloidal silver is a great remedy. All right. So now we're going to go on to prescription medications.
Yes.
I'm not a big proponent of prescription medication, but one of our children was born with a non-functioning thyroid.
Yes.
Because of that, he has to be on thyroid medication every day. And it isn't something we enjoy, but it's something that we have to do.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is that if you're on prescription medication, whether it be for diabetes or a heart condition, high cholesterol,
stock up.
Don't let a 30-day emergency where you can't get to Costco to get a prescription destroy your health. Because you didn't have medication.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The two last things that I'm going to touch on are an emergency homeopathy kit.
Yeah.
I have, a really pretty big one that I use regularly. Mine came with a book that it's basically a list of what kind of symptoms. It's very specific. So you don't just look up cold,
mm-hmm.
flu. What kind of cold? Are they desiring cold drinks or are they rejecting cold? Are they craving heat? Is their face flushed? I mean, it's very specific.
Yeah. It has a list of all the different symptoms that the person might have and which one to use.
Yeah. And you use so little and they last for a long time. And homeopathy, the way it works is to work with your body to fight off something. It's not, again, the kind of thing that will take away
the symptoms. It gets rid of the problem.
Right. So we have that and we've used it for many years.
Yeah, ever since I can remember, really.
Yeah. The last, and to me lately, the most important, because this has come into play this last few days,
yeah,
is allergy medication. Mm-hmm. Normally,
we don't need that.
Yeah.
Because none of us have allergies, but... Yeah.
But I just bought some. I thought, well, we need to have that on stock. Even though none of us have allergies, it doesn't matter. You never know. And it just so happened that 3 days ago, Hero started having some reaction to something we do not know.
Yeah.
And he broke out his entire body in welt-like hives.
Mm-hmm.
And it was making us very nervous. I gave him some Dimetapp, some Benadryl,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't Dimetapp, it was Benadryl, within 45 minutes to an hour, the hives started going away. We're still trying to figure out what it is. He goes to the doctor soon, and when we go to get his thyroid checked, we're going to ask for some allergy testing.
Yeah.
And also a prescription for an EpiPen.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, it was all over his face and his back, and his neck did look a little poofy.
Yeah, and he was sounding funny. He was talking a little funny.
Yeah.
So it just makes us nervous that it may get to that point, and we want to make sure that we are prepared if something does happen.
Yeah.
And the other thing is visitors. Yeah. I mean, honestly, you never know when somebody might have an allergic reaction. I know that EpiPens are by prescription only. So if you do have somebody in your family that has a severe allergy to something, request an EpiPen, but you never know if you might need to use it for somebody else.
Yeah.
So, all right. I think that covers a very basic home medical kit.
Yes.
If you had those things, I think you could probably make it through a medical emergency or even an illness or whatever, not being able to get to medical help.
For how long?
Well, it depends on how robust you made your kit.
All right.
You know, I mean, ours would get us through for a long time.
Yeah.
Because we don't have to use it very often.
Yeah, we don't have very many medical issues.
Yeah, we really don't. You know, again, emphasis on maintaining your health,
mm-hmm.
not needing medical care
to
do it. All right. So now we're going to talk about sourdough starter.
Yes.
Sourdough starter is one of those things that is so easy to do, and I don't know why, but I think it's gotten kind of a bad rap out there. Like, it's somehow a really complicated process.
Kind of like yogurt.
Yeah.
It's
really
easy.
Not. Yeah. It's a matter of, it's got three ingredients. What three ingredients?
Water, flour, and thyme.
Yes. So you don't have to put anything in it except water and flour. And then just give it some time. It will ferment. And each day you're going to feed it and stir it. Make sure you're using either a glass or a crock to keep it in. Do not put it in metal. It will not react well with the metal. So don't use metal spoons in it. Don't use a metal bowl. We use glass jars. And right now ours is in a gallon size jar. Mm-hmm. And we cover it with a cheesecloth and then rubber band it. Now, this is interesting. The last batch that Ella made, she just decided, I'll just put the lid on in a canted way so that oxygen can still get in, but, you know, the bugs will stay out. What she wasn't counting on was the fruit flies, which loved it.
Yeah. They went loved in. It. And they were crawling around in it.
Yeah. So after a whole week...
It was disgusting.
...of growing the sourdough starter, it was covered
spoiled.
In... Yeah, flies. So we threw that away. We started a new one, and this time she covered it in cheesecloth and rubber banded it so that it's tight and no insects can get in.
Mm-hmm.
But the oxygen still can.
Yes.
Because the oxygen is necessary to do the fermentation. Mm-hmm. And each day you're going to feed it. Some flour, some water stir, and after a week, it's usually ready to use.
And you just posted something about this, right?
I did, yeah. Just talked about wanting to tell everybody how to make sourdough starter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we will be putting what recipe we use on the website. Now, the one thing that we do a little bit different, which we're testing out, is using... half water and half yogurt whey, because the yogurt whey is supposed to be really healthy and it already has a tart taste. It's not necessary. It's just something that we wanted to try because we have all this yogurt whey and we'd like to be able to utilize it.
Yeah.
I used it in soaked whole wheat bread last week too, and the bread turned out great. It tasted almost sourdough.
It did.
And it wasn't. And I used the whey.
And it rose a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It popped our bread machine.
Yeah.
Literally, the lid popped off.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
And that was really good, and we let that sit for 24 hours, too. So it was a soaked whole wheat bread. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, again, we'll put the recipe for our sourdough starter that we use. And remember, it's really easy. It doesn't, you know, don't overcomplicate anything. You need very basic
supplies
to do it. And just, you know, put it together.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's it for today. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Our scripture for today comes from Psalm 1, verses 1 and 2. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.